I'm here with Bob Veras today. Woohoo! Hey, what's up, financial advisors? My name is Sarah Grill, and welcome to my podcast. I'm a CFA charter holder, and I used to be a financial advisor. I do bi-weekly podcasts on the topic of financial advisor lead generation, and I'm a badass and the best, and I'm better than the rest, so forget about them. Hallelujah. Amen. Advisors, don't hide. Just smash the subscribe, and let's ride. So today I have Bob Veras here, and he's going to be talking about the future of the profession. Bob is the publisher of Inside Information, and he's been writing about financial planners for 37 years. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. You know, I envy your modesty. I wish I could manage that.
So, Bob, this is coming from an English major turned CFA, turned financial advisor, turned financial writer. So, Bob, you were a physics, math, and computer sci major in college.
Right.
And then you got like a BA in English literature with a minor in physics and mathematics. And then
right.
An MA in English literature.
Just the typical path you take through college, pretty much.
I mean, I just was curious, were you pre-med as well? Do you have a law degree? Like,
no, I wanted to be an astronomer and write science fiction novels. And I was playing college football at the time and also ran track at the college, at Union College. And my dad died and I switched my major to English, which was my first love, but I continued taking courses in my second and third love. So I was well prepared when I came into the financial services world because the mathematics is basically easy. It's algebra, you know? And so I was able to master the mathematics, which a lot of writers are not really up on.
So tell us about your path, or I mean, maybe just start with this. Where did you grow up? Are you from upstate New York where Union College is?
Well, I grew up in Syracuse, New York. And So I always get depressed in the winter, even though I live in San Diego now, I still start to get depressed right around now, this time of year. And so moved to New York City for high school. And there's kind of an interesting story how I got into this profession. But when my dad died, my mother moved down to Georgia and I moved down there with her and I graduated from the University of Georgia. And here I was in Georgia. I became in Atlanta probably the best. I was the writer in Atlanta where if you're an editor, editors were all crazy, by the way, of magazines, in case anybody, people think that, you know.
Hold on a second. Editors are all crazy, but Bob Hoopter is not crazy.
Yeah, pretty much he is. If you knew him well, he's got these. Well, they're crazy in a certain particular way. They have really interesting articles that they would like to have written, and most of those articles they'd like to have written are almost impossible to write without losing money. You know, it takes you like 3 months to write them. And so I was the guy in Atlanta who the editors would hire for those projects that they couldn't get anybody else to do. And I was doing that for a while. And then I was hired to be the editor of a magazine, an esteemed magazine called Air Cargo World, and discovered that I was a pretty good editor. I kind of enjoyed it. And 7 months later, I was hired to be the editor of Financial Planning Magazine. And I told them, you know, I've never even balanced my own checkbook. I'm probably not capable of doing this work. And they said, you're our boy, you just come on. And so I had this learning curve that went straight up. It went, you know, like it looked like that cliff in Yosemite. And I'm still climbing it. I'm still climbing the learning curve. There is never going to be a time when I feel comfortable that I know what everything that's going on in this profession.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're pretty passionate though about writing and reading and literature. And
I'm passionate about the profession.
Why?
The profession is one of the, well, it's the newest profession in our ecosystem. You know, we have accounting and medicine and law, and financial planning is going to become the newest and arguably the most important profession for the average consumer. You know, a doctor will keep you alive, but the quality of your life is going to be largely determined by your financial planning relationship at some point in the future. And I want to be part of the process that makes that happen, that makes that profession come alive in the world and improve the lives of people. There's a much longer version of that, but that's the short version.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you view financial planners financial planning is not just an add-on to the services that financial advisors give their clients, but something that's going to become increasingly important in the future.
Yes. The dynamic we're in right now is that we're going through at least three and maybe four evolutions in the profession. Evolution one, of course, is from sales to financial planning. From sales to asset management. I apologize. And that was a big transition. I remember when that happened, the people who were doing asset management, people thought they were crazy. They had this new revenue model called AUM, and they weren't sure how to make money at it. And those people practically starved before they got their feet under them. But it was a great shift in terms of benefiting the end consumer. It wasn't sales anymore. It wasn't predatory. And now we're going through from AUM to financial planning. AUM is becoming, or asset management is becoming, somewhat commoditized. And financial planning is becoming the lead service, which is basically helping people navigate through the most god-awful complicated economic system that the human mind could possibly create. And we make it even more complicated. I mean, we're going to go through another tax change shortly. I have a cartoon that I published once in my newsletter that has a happy news commentator saying to the camera, he says to the audience, today Congress made simplified the tax system by adding 1,000 more pages to it. And we're going to do that again. And then the next iteration, the one that's kind of on the cutting edge right now, is from financial planning to something that's more holistic. You might call it coaching, you might call it life planning, you might call it personal planning. But it, instead of me being a financial planner who gives you top-down advice, I co-create the financial plan with you, and I help you coach through the life challenges to reach your goals. And you articulate goals, and some of those goals might not be financial. And that's where I think where financial planning finally achieves its promise. That's where financial planning, we move into what I call the age of, I should remember what I call it. The age, the personal satisfaction age, the age of, instead of us being creatures that have our nose to the grindstone, we become creatures who fulfill who we are as God, him or herself, created us. What are we here for? And that's a pretty complicated transition. Most people can't make that transition without help. Financial planners will help people make that transition. But we're still in the very early stages of making that last shift, that evolutionary shift in the profession. The question is, what's the revenue model?
Okay, I was going to get to that, but
okay.
I got to tell you, though, that I see a lot of financial advisors that totally disregard financial planning, not even doing planning for their clients, okay? They're basically holding themselves out as financial advisors on the investment side. And if they do planning, it's an afterthought or an add-on. It's central.
That's probably the center of gravity in the profession right now.
Right. And so it's hard for me. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I got to tell you that the average financial advisor that I deal with is still like getting paid fees for AUM. If that's how they define themselves and they look at themselves is, I don't want to do the planning. They keep it to a minimum. If there's something that comes up, I'll work with the person's accountant. But that's the extent to which a lot of these firms are involved with financial planning for clients.
So
they're still businesses, though. So I want to discuss the revenue model, because I feel as if until that changes, until they start to really get squeezed and they can't afford to like take that vacation to Antigua with their family every year because they're getting their revenues not what it used to be. I feel like until that happens, I don't know that they're going to want to make the shift to planning.
So you're traveling in the ocean and what is your guiding star? What clients most want and most need, most desire? And so back in the day when everybody was selling And financial planning came along and everybody was selling more efficiently. And then some people started going fee only and doing assets under management because that was what their clients wanted. They went through a very difficult period where they had to invent their revenue model, but it was a better mousetrap. It was what clients wanted. And they followed that star and they became the most successful advisors in this profession. And they're the people you're talking about. That star is now what it, you continue following that star. What do clients want right now? Clients want a better life. They want financial guidance. They want your professionalism. Most of the younger people I talk to, the Gen Y and Gen Z people, I say, would you pay 1% of your assets a year for someone to manage your assets? And they laugh at me. They understand better, I think, than the baby boomers do, that there really isn't anybody who can get a lot of alpha, squeeze a lot of alpha out of the market. And so there's not, you're not really paying for getting a better return. What you're paying for is the professional advice. They're willing to pay for that professional advice. And the subscription model and the flat fee model is coming along, and that's going to be the Gen Y and Gen Z model. And the firms that are charging AUM are going to have to adapt to that. They have to follow that star. That star is calling them to something beyond simply managing assets. Now, that doesn't mean they're not having a great business right now. What I'm here to tell you is where it's going.
But how do you see life for the 52-year-old, 55-year-old financial advisor that has been in the business for 20 years, has 100 million, 200 million under management, and they're making a good living, the clients are reasonably happy, their clients are around their same age or a little bit older. Do you see them being affected by this?
Yeah, of course. But they may be able to ride it out. They may be able to go to 65 or 70 and their clients will be 65 or 70 and then their clients will start dying and they won't have a model that is, if you notice, I'll say it a different way. I talked to a firm in Minneapolis about this and I said, take a look at your average age of your clients and the growth of the assets of the existing clients. And they went back and they did this and they were quite interested in what they found. They found that their average client age was growing at roughly 1 year a year. They found that the average assets per client for existing clients was declining. They were bringing on older clients the same age as their existing clients who were a little bit wealthier, and that was how they were making their money. And I said, is this sustainable? And the answer, of course, is no, it's not. Unless you just decide to retire when your clients don't need you anymore or when they all die off. So what we need is a model that's going to serve the next generation and the one after that and the one after that. Those advisors are going to do just fine. And I tell them, you know, what I would do, what I recommend is that you continue to serve your baby boom advisors with an AUM model if they're happy with it. And you start a different flat fee model for younger clients and you bring them on because you've got to replenish your client base. You've got to bring on new people.
Or also the hourly model. What do you think of the hourly pricing model?
I think it's probably the least desirable model for consumers. It's probably the best way to fit the effort you put forth to what you charge. Mm-hmm. And I think people should charge a lot because the expertise requires a lot. But, you know, I had another cartoon in my newsletter and it showed a client sitting down across from the advisor and the advisor is sitting behind the desk and the advisor is saying, we have a new way of charging and I think you're really gonna like it. And behind the chair is a meter. And I think most clients don't really want that meter running. They want to know what they're going to be paying. They want to know that, you know, it's going to be X number of dollars a year. And that I think is the flat fee model. I think that's where it's going. Hourly's fine. There's nothing wrong with hourly. CPAs charge hourly and they seem to do pretty well.
Well, yes, I'm thinking of my accountant when I talk about the hourly model, but I'm also thinking about the anxiety I have with my accountant about every month wondering what he's going to bill me for, because there's very little transparency.
Yeah, there needs to be clarity. And I think that's why, you know, the AUM has the advantage of being clear and not being easy to translate into actual dollars. You're paying 1% of portfolio or whatever, 75.
Right. Oh, what's 1%? Right.
Yeah, that's right. 75 basis points, less than 1%, even better, you know? Yeah. Whereas a flat fee, you can charge. Michael Kitsis talks about saliency. With a flat fee, you're billing out of the portfolio, but they know what you're paying. And so it's a little easier for them to wonder about the value of your services compared to what they're paying. But by the same token, flat fee gives you a way to charge your less wealthy clients appropriately. When I talk to, you know, I do some consulting and I talk to advisors and I say, create a spreadsheet. And on the spreadsheet, I want you to put down how much each client is paying you based on AUM, of course, and then how much time you're spending with each client and how much time your associates are spending with each client, and multiply those by an appropriate amount, $300 an hour or $400 an hour or whatever it is. And then take all your office expenses and divide those by a number of clients and put that in another column. So everybody's paying for your overhead. And then add all those expenses up and then subtract those expenses from what they're paying you. And everybody I've ever talked to says that 60 to 80% of their clients, that's a negative number. They're actually, based on that calculation, they're losing money on 60 to 80% of their clients. So what I say is, talk to your clients who have the biggest negative number and say, we'd like to move you to a flat fee model and we think you're going to like this way of us charging, but we're going to be charging you more because you've been a loss leader for us. And the surprising thing is that most clients go along with that. If they don't, you erase a negative number on your spreadsheet. If they do, they're now profitable. And so it's an easy way for you to practice charging this new way. Now, what becomes complicated, of course, is you've got clients who never call you, who have, you know, $12 million under management, and they're obscenely profitable on that spreadsheet. The question is, what do you do about them? And nobody has come up with a great answer. My answer is, you treat them the same as everybody else. You put them on a flat fee, but you don't have to do that first. You don't have to do that immediately. You don't have to do that until there's market pressure that makes you do that.
So, Bob, talk to me about the changes you've seen in 2020 with the pandemic and how you see that playing out in the future.
Well, everything's just the same, business as usual, you know, just normal. Everybody working remotely, working with their clients by Zoom call rather than face-to-face. Markets go down dramatically and then suddenly they go back up again. The markets decouple from the underlying economy. It's just, you know, it's just the way everything usually goes. The biggest change I'm seeing is that clients, and I think we're all surprised by this, clients learned how to use Zoom technology or Google Chat or whatever, you know, a face-to-screen relationship, and adapted to it the same way advisory firms did. And now it's going to become, as we go forward, a normal part of your client relationship. Clients, you know, they may want to meet with you every once in a while, but most of the time they want to do a quick Zoom chat, you know, instead of an hour meeting where you go over the portfolio, which is pretty boring, I think.
You got to worry about like the traffic and you drive there and you got to disrupt your whole day.
Yeah. Instead of that, you just do a quick Zoom call from your house, maybe while you're eating dinner, you know, and the advisor says, what's going on with you? What can I do to help? What are you thinking these days? And it's a much quicker call and it doesn't require a lot of travel, but the interesting thing about that, there's two interesting things about that are kind of intertwined with each other a little bit, is that you can now work with and market to clients who are on the other side of the Mississippi. You can work with anybody. I say you can work with somebody on the moon. And so you don't any longer have to confine your marketing efforts to people who are within a 40-minute drive of your office. And a lot of advisors already kind of knew that because they were working by telephone mostly with people who had moved away from their market, but they were still working with these people. That's a fairly normal client base these days. But the marketing efforts were never expanded. But at the same time, every single advisor in the country can now market in your territory. And so now you're competing with every other advisor in the country. And the question I ask people is, do you have the most compelling value proposition of any advisor in the country? If not, you're in trouble.
I still think, though, that people would rather work with an advisor that is within an hour of their home.
All right, let me propose something to you. Let's propose that you're a young dentist coming out of dental school, and you're looking around for a financial planner. You live right next door to a financial planner who does financial plans and manages assets on an AUM basis. On the other side of the Mississippi, your search turns up an advisor who specializes in dentists who are leaving dental school. They help negotiate your arrangements with a new dental practice. They know the idioms of the dental world. They know the jokes of the dental world. They advertise in dental magazines. They attend dental conferences. And they understand the tax challenges of an emerging dental practice. Now, you're going to decide which financial advisor you want to work with. Am I going to work with that person across the Mississippi on a face-to-screen basis? Or am I going to work with this generalist who lives right next door? And they may decide to work with the generalist right next door, but I'm guessing that 9 times out of 10, they're going to work with a person who specializes in them.
Yes, absolutely.
So what happens then is you get advisory firms all over the country who are creating these specialized services. People call them niches, but it's really a professionalism. It's kind of like you wouldn't call a person who does knee replacement surgery, he has a niche. That's not a niche. That's a specialization in a particular kind of part of the medical profession. And I think the same thing is evolving in the financial planning profession, where you will have a niche, which is really a specialization, and so will pretty much everybody else. And so people will search for someone more or less like them. It'd be great if that person was nearby. And there might be 2 or 3 in the country and one of them is nearby and you'll choose that one.
I totally agree with this. And one of the things I do advocate for with the financial advisors that I work with is them creating a kind of a niche. The problem is that so many of them are hesitant to do this because they're worried about who they'll lose.
Well, there's no reason to lose anybody.
That they think that they're, if I go out and I say, I'm the financial advisor for people who just graduated from dental school, they are so terrified and worried, even though they'll gain so much credibility, they'll have so much stronger of a value proposition. These advisors are terrified that they are going to lose the person next door to them that sees their bulletin or that sees their blog on their website or that talks to them at the networking function when they say, I'm an advisor for dentists. They are so worried that they're going to lose that person.
Well, I wouldn't invite them to my networking function for dentists. That's the first thing I would say. But the greater terror, if they're that afraid they're going to lose their clients, they must not have a great relationship with those clients. And I think part of the way to strengthen that relationship is to get more deeply involved in their goals and desires, and which goes back to the first thing I was saying, that I think there's, and you say, you know, I have a particular specialty in dentists, but I have clients that I've worked with for years that are really important to me, and I'm giving them the very best service I have. I just happen to have a specialty in such and such. I work with a general practitioner who also happens to specialize in dermatology. But he is my general practitioner doctor when I go through the medical system, and he's the person who will refer me and recommend me out. He just happens to have another. So I don't think it's not an impediment to me anyway.
Right. Like I'm always approached by people that, and you know, I'm focused on financial advisors, but because I'm out there so much, I do get a fair amount of people that come as a referral from one of my existing financial advisor clients. And I say, I'm like, I'm not focused on like, you know, this like IT, for example, right? Like I get these IT people and I'm like, I'm not focused on your industry, but they're like, but I like the way that you do business. I like the way that you think. You see what I'm saying? So I think that's the same for financial advisors. Like if they're going to look at you and say, I'm not crazy about the fact that you seem focused on dentists and I'm not a dentist, then what failed there was something in the way that you presented yourself that was incompatible with them or did not impress them about you as an advisor.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And you know, a specialty will eventually emerge by attrition. You know, you'll have clients who will work with you and then they age out. Every advisory firm I've ever talked to has legacy clients that were the first people who started with them and helped them build their business that are not really appropriate for who they are and what they are right now. This is just taking that to the next step.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, listen, I think we're going to wrap here. Any closing thoughts? I always like to give people like three things to remember from this podcast. What would you say?
The first thing is to recognize that there is this migration path, this evolutionary path that professionals are taking, and to understand where that guiding star is. That guiding star is what clients want from you. Continue to pay attention to what they want from you. What would be best for them? Whatever would be best for them is the most important thing you can offer as a value proposition to the marketplace at large. And what I would argue what they want is a better life. What could be better than a better life? Take my money, give me a better life. And so helping them achieve their goals. One of the things I talk about is the performance statement of the future is going to be achievement of goals. What goals did we identify at the beginning of this year that you have achieved? And what goals have you achieved since inception of our relationship? And if they're achieving their goals, and of course the goals will change. They, as you achieve some, you have to set more. There's always another mountain. You climb this mountain and then you look out there and there's always more mountains out there. If they're achieving their goals, they're never going to leave you. Another, and I'm going to give you a marketing story because you're a marketing maven and your audience is probably interested in marketing ideas. And you got me on LinkedIn, which is really annoying because now I have to like check LinkedIn and stuff.
Wow, I'm so happy to hear that you're on LinkedIn now. And thanks for the ebook.
We'll hear from my lawyers.
Hey, and by the way, everybody, if you have not purchased 47 Financial Advisor LinkedIn Messages, please click the link in the show notes and go ahead and smash that link and get it. Okay, Bob. So yes, now marketing story. Go ahead.
I'm a big believer in stories, telling stories. And so what I would do is take some successful client stories. Now, if you don't have any client success stories, that's a problem and you should work on that first. But most advisors, they have a few really good client success stories. Names redacted, tell those stories on your website and maybe in video, but certainly in written form. You know, here was the presenting symptom. Here was the type of client that I work with. And that communicates a few things. One is, you know, what kind of clients do you like to work with? What kind of challenges do you like to address? And here's a happy outcome. These are the kind of happy outcomes that we can produce for you. So a client can come on there, self-decide whether you're a fit, and then look at the possible future success story that they could be enjoying before they ever get on the online with you, before they ever call you.
Yeah. I love it. These are great ideas. Okay, Bob. So listen, how can people, and I know a ton of people already are on Inside Information, the service that you publish. How can people sign up for that if they haven't already?
My website is bob@bobveres.com. bob@bobveres.com. So you can go on there.
Your website is bob@bobveres.com.
That's my website.
Okay.
And there's a couple interesting things. First of all, the material you find there is more in depth and more relevant than anything you'll find anywhere else, because I've been doing this for 37 years, but you have to pay for it. And that's a big hurdle for a lot of people. Pay for information. How would I do that? And but the interesting thing is I've always provided a no questions asked money back guarantee. So if people want to try the service and they hate it, or they feel like they're not getting value out of it or whatever, typically there are as many as 10 articles, and it's never the same 10, but 10 articles that any advisor will find in there that will far more than pay for the service, because it opened up a door for them in some way. And the service costs $209 for initial people. It costs $349 the first year. And if you don't get $349 of value out of it in your business life, then you're not doing it right. And if you don't, and if you're not doing it right, I refund the money. That's the easy thing. I don't want people subscribing to a service they're not getting value out of.
I hear you. Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm going to put the link in the show notes below. Well, listen, it was great having you. And everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And I'll see you in the next one. Thanks, everybody.